Welcome, everybody, to Go For Side Effects. I'm your host, Kevin Simon. You all know my co-host, John. How you doing?
Hey, everybody. Doing good. Doing
everybody
good.
Knows Tina.
Hello.
Tina, how you doing today?
I'm awesome.
It must be nice having a beautiful background. And why, we're here in Texas flooding right now. But, you know, at least I got power, man. I can't believe I got power. Storms last night. And then we have Wade. Wade, how are you doing?
No, staying dry in Iowa.
That's rude, man. Why do you got to say staying dry in Iowa, man? Knowing that we're...
It's going to rain all weekend on me, if that makes you feel better.
Well, yeah. Well, I know.
Yeah.
It's a whole weekend. Thanks a lot. Well, this is part two of General Schwarzkopf's testimony. And before we get into it, a little... You know, let's do a little recap on this, you know, that this was not a sworn in testimony. And, you know, dang well that it was all pre-written, pre-read, all that to him. Okay.
Prepared. Yeah,
that's right. Prepared. It definitely was. And here's the part to me, because when I went to part two and I was going over it and where we're going to have stopping points, the more I went over it, the more angrier I was getting, because it's the realization of how long they knew about this. And this right here is the reason why part two is actually called about our children, our wives, husbands, spouses, and friends, dogs, everybody. If y'all think about this, when we got back in 1993, how many problems did we have in the United States as far as, you know, like autism and, you know, all these, you know, genetic problems, right?
I distinctly remember, and I can't find anything on it, but I distinctly remember there being this rumor that was rampant through the military community that babies that were born shortly after our return were being born with holes in their hearts and birth defects. Like, it was bad.
Right.
Like,
okay. And, you know, and really, so this part goes out to really to the Go For Baby sites. And I think it's important for everybody who, you know, is listening that wasn't there. This will kind of give you a general idea of, I think, why most of us are sick since the early 90s till now. And the growing population around the world has gotten sick. And I would like to get into part two right now. Are y'all ready?
Ready.
And Dan Topolsky.
You knew that we identified biological agents and chemical agents, nerve gas, mustard gas, and suspected biological agents within that bunker complex. And that was only what we could see on the surface, because we were instructed not to disturb anything. So what was behind them is completely and totally unknown. And you know, as well as I do, that you and your staff did not allow the use of biological detectors within the entire theater of operations. If there was any biologicals in that bunker, and I suspect there was, if there was any biologicals in those bunkers, you knew about it.
Now, I think it's important at this time to mention that I personally have viewed this videotape that was brought back from Camisea, and I have seen with my own eyes pictures of munitions with American markings on them, as well as markings that indicate that these munitions were brought in from Jordan and from the United Kingdom, from England, as well as the Soviet Union. As a matter of fact, as I viewed this footage from this videotape, not one time did I see any munition with any Arabic writing on it. This would indicate that there were many different countries that were supplying Iraq with munitions, both conventional and chemical and biological. And these all were done so against the 1972 Geneva Accord, which clearly made it illegal for any country to manufacture, distribute, deploy, sell, or proliferate chemical or biological weapons.
All right, I want to stop it right there. That was the first talking point. This was no Arabic. We know that during the Iran controversy with Iraq, that we sent this stuff over. Everybody knew it and everything. But if it's against the law, how were we able to do that? That's the thing I don't understand. How do these companies get away with it even today if they make any of this stuff?
That's a really good question, you know, and, you know, I've seen photographs of boxes that were there that don't necessarily line up with, you know, any country that I would have recognized the where the munitions came from. And I know that I was in an ammo unit, and I know that we had prop charges from the Vietnam War that probably shouldn't have been there or were dangerous. And I know that we had white phosphorus, Willie P. Mm-hmm. That's chemical munition all day long. So, you know.
Wade, do you want to add in on this?
I guess it's similar to the discussion I was having with my daughter just the other day, that historically the United States has not always been the good guy in the past and currently. We support and supply at the convenience of the United States. And then when it's not convenient anymore, we go in and decide to change the regime, if you will. And that's what we have historically done.
It's what we currently do now. And the narrative. Yeah.
You know, that's, yes. You know, so you know, it does not, this many years later, it does not surprise me.
Yeah.
It does. I would say that it does surprise me. Maybe I grew up really naive, and I just never, you know, I was stunned at this even, right? And this recording and the blatant disconnect. A few years ago, before I learned what I did about what we went through, I wouldn't have even known it was a disconnect. I would have been in line, falling in line and in sync, going, yeah, y'all are crazy. You know, we would never do that. So it's a hard pill to swallow. But I do think that the United States, there's a game in the background that's always being played.
Right. And this is where we're going to get, I'm going to start it up right now. And the more this goes, the more y'all are going to get angrier. And so let's keep going with this.
Now, when it comes to identifying chemicals and biologicals, here's what General Schwarzkopf had to say. Again, this is General Schwarzkopf's own words in his testimony before the Senate panel on January 29th, 1997.
I would tell you that even though I had 40-some years in the military service, if you were to bring in a bunch of ammunition and pile it up in front of me, and one of them was a 122-millimeter rocket with chemicals in it, I would not be able to tell you that that had chemicals in it, particularly if it was an Iraqi rocket with Arabic writing on it or something of the sort. We identify ours when we had them in a very specific way by color coding. I don't have the slightest idea what the Arabs did.
Now, that last statement leads me to a question. I have to ask this question. How is it possible that the commander of the coalition forces, and that's 28 countries, how is it possible that the commander of these forces would not be able to have that type of information at his fingertips? I don't know the answer to that question, but I would think that if we were going into an operation where we knew that Saddam Hussein had the potential for using chemical and biological weapons, and we knew that he did use them in the Iran-Iraq war because, after all, the United States had helped to supply both sides with chemical and biological munitions. How is it possible that General Schwarzkopf would not have this information at his fingertips?
Okay.
He just outed himself in that statement. He just completely outed himself, mentioning the fact that he may not understand the Arabic writing, but if you listen to our last show and you listen to his previous conversation, you know, and the NCOIC that was in charge saying he knew what they were, General Schwarzkopf knew what they were. General Schwarzkopf is very
intelligence brief. He has a daily intelligence brief at that level, especially when we're in the middle of something like this, right? And he knew exactly verbatim what was there.
But what y'all missed is, He even said he knows the colors.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, no, that's what I'm saying.
He's trying to say, I don't know how foreign munitions would have marked it, right? And that's a fair statement. But in that case, err on the side of caution. You don't know what's in it.
Well, but he said, well, if it was, I don't remember verbatim what he just said, but I do know it was an Arabic, so I don't have the slightest idea, which might be a fair statement. I'm sure he has people around him that can tell him what it was.
He knew what was in it. Had to.
You know, I mean, yes, he did. He knew what was in it. So,
Wade, you were up there.
Again, like the conversation I had with Tina. You know, we had the way we signify our own ammunition. When I was discussing that with Tina, but like she brought up the point, we don't know how they did it. And she's right. I mean, you know, and maybe it was an international coding system. I don't know. You know, I know how we do. But when you're giving a salute report back for what you see, that's all you can report is what you see. That's for the higher ups, for the people, their knowledge to pass it up to the intelligence to let them figure it out.
And that kind of whole operations team that's aggregating and parsing out and streamlining this information. So what he's saying is somebody filtered it out to him if he's being truthful.
Okay, so but here's my question to y'all, because I don't know much about this because y'all are more on the Army side. Y'all dealt with this the most. But pretty much color-coded means, you know, it's dangerous chemicals, this, and this. Mm-hmm. And did you hear him say ours are color-coded to green, yellow, right?
Yep.
But earlier, it was against the Geneva Convention Act in 1976 to have it.
They have the chemical and biologicals.
That's right. That's right. Yep.
It's against the Geneva Convention to get caught being the state.
But if he's saying ours are color-coded, then I'm thinking to myself, well, how in the hell are we supposed to have it if it's against that? And that's the thing that I kept going back over. I mean, I'm telling you, I can't tell you how many times I listened to this thing today, and that's the one thing that stood out the most. Well, no, there's one more little detail, and I'd like to get into that right now, so I'm going to start it, because this is where it all gets really good.
I again asked Sergeant Dan Topolsky to make a comment about General Schwarzkopf's testimony when it came to the identification of chemical and biological munitions.
General Schwarzkopf, you stated that you spent 40 years in the military and you could not identify an Iraqi chemical or biological munition. I spent 6.5 years in the military, and after reading the publications, I could detect chemicals and biological agents by their markings on the munitions, biologicals being the green bands, chemicals being the yellow or purple bands. We knew what we were dealing with when we blew up that bunker. Or that bunker complex, we sent the information to you as to what we suspected was in those bunkers, and you or your staff told us to blow it anyway. You knew exactly what was in there prior to the detonation.
Ladies and gentlemen, I realize that this testimony being given by Sergeant Dan Topolsky is damning, to say the least, towards General Schwarzkopf's testimony. I think it's important at this time that we get a little bit of a background on Sergeant Topolsky, so I asked him to make a statement and let us know a little bit about himself.
My name is Dan Topolsky. I was a sergeant promotable. I was the NBC NCO for B Company, 37th Engineer Battalion. I was the commander's main advisor on all aspects pertaining to nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare. I also was on the Commissia Bunker Complex mission. I am extremely appalled by the stance that my leaders have taken. The disinformation that's out there through the government and the government bureaucracies, it's allowing them to keep us from being treated. It's allowing them to, or enabling them to deny us just compensation for our disabilities. The entire situation completely and thoroughly disgusts me because they are not willing to tell the truth in order to remain politically correct within certain circles up in Washington, D.C. I suffer from most of the symptoms, all but about two, for the Mycoplasma fermentans incognitus. I've been diagnosed as having organophosphate delayed effect neurotoxicity as a direct result of being exposed to nerve agents. My wife, within the last year, has had five surgeries. Of any of them, she has yet to find any comfort. All three of my children are sick. They have headaches, joint pains, skin rashes. I have a dog that has degenerative joint disease. And just recently, our medical insurance has been terminated because we used up our lifetime amount over the course of the last 2 years.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think it bears mentioning that when 60 Minutes did their research and assembled that panel from the 37th Engineering Battalion in the summer of 1996, Sergeant Dan Topolsky was the only individual from that panel that did not show symptoms of the Gulf War illness. Since that time, he has, as he mentioned, developed those symptoms, and his wife has developed those symptoms, as well as his children and his dog. And I would like to commend Sergeant Dan Topolsky, as well as Sergeant Kevin Wright, for having the incredible amount of courage that it takes to make the statements that they've made and to allow their voices to be used on this tape and on the many different radio broadcasts that Joyce Riley and I have been doing over the past several months. This courage is a demonstration of their love of their country, because after all, they're not facing Saddam Hussein and the Republican Guard. Now they're facing those in Washington who call themselves the United States government.
Okay, that's where I wanted to start it. Stop right there. Now,
I don't like that last statement.
I love that. And
I don't.
I love what he said because he's right. These people who have been in Congress for 30-something years knew about it. They washed it and they washed it under the rug, swept it under the rug, however y'all want to say it. They held it from us, but they knew about it. And you know, and that's the stuff. You got Dan, that senator, testifying, and he's up there and he's telling her that his wife is sick, his kids are sick. I'm sorry, but General Schwarzkopf, he didn't take an oath to protect Congress, the Senate, and the presidency. He took it to, you know, for the people, we the people, for his command. That was his job to protect.
You know, I agree with you. I was really like, it took me a little bit to come down off of the level of heat that I felt when I started listening to this. And I truly started thinking about, was he signaling us by not swearing in? Was he signaling us by saying, I prepared this statement, this is a prepared statement? Because I almost feel like maybe he felt boxed in, like he had to, you know. Now, he made that decision, so there's that. But, I mean, in this hearing specifically, did he feel like he had to toe the narrative? I don't know. Was he threatened? Was his family threatened? Who knows? I mean, if we're going to subscribe to these people are this powerful to do this and maintain this, like, what was he up against? I'm trying to give him some grace and not hate his soul right now, you know?
Well, so. Right. I mean, I think he was a great general. I think he was a really, really good general. He went in there, swept it. He knew what he was doing. But when we all got back, each and every one of us, he didn't protect us. He protected the people with the money, not from us.
Well, I mean, from the outset, I don't know about you, but I got a whole boatload of shots. I don't even know what the hell half of them were. That I went over there. I mean, seriously. I mean, why did I have three rounds of bubonic plague? That's a weird, like, what? Why? Find out where the test bed for Cipro, which is an antibiotic for bladder infections. What the hell does that have to do with what we were going over there to do, right? Then the PBTAB fiasco, which they needed us to have the sarin gas exposure to test those. So it's only a slimy deal out the gate, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But this is what I always, but first off, I don't even know where to respond. First, I want to go back because this is where Tina's background, but in the beginning of that segment, this is what Tina and I were kind of talking about. He goes back and he talks about the yellow bands being chemical, the green bands being biological. Mm-hmm. Those pictures that I forwarded to you guys earlier in the week, you can clearly see
yellow.
So, I mean, that guy there.
And then in those random boxes, what were those?
I have no idea.
No markings whatsoever.
Right.
So that, and then when you go on, was just a big, basically a big, oh shit. You know, we didn't know what it was, and we were trying to bury it. Our stuff was there. They wanted to destroy evidence, and they didn't know what was happening.
They didn't want to be, what was it, Oliver North?
Yeah. See, I heard that it was basically, they didn't want to, supposedly one of the stories I heard, well, we don't want to go into enemy hands. You know, we're going to need to dispose of it. And I'm like, meh. Okay, that's a bit of a hard pill to swallow because it got there somehow, and that's likely because we gave it to them, you know. And like you said earlier, Kevin.
But when?
Well, we were supplying them years ago. I mean,
that was the Iran-Iraq controversy.
You had stuff from Vietnam. Hell, we probably, I don't know that we were dealing with anything in our unit that we necessarily had from Vietnam, but we were talking about color coding or color bands on things. So Wade, if I hand you a grenade with a blue band on it, what does that mean to you?
It means nothing to me, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay. Well, typically a blue band is just, it's a training. It's
mm-hmm. Okay. It's, yeah. You
know, it means it's in there. You know. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yellow, it's like, oh shit, this is live. Somebody gonna die.
Well, I'm telling you, if you hand me a grenade, I'm going to pull the pin. I don't give a shit what kind of band it's got on. It's got a button.
And then you're going to be looking for that damn
grenade.
But the other thing, like Tina was going on, like talking about like the pre-deployment shots, you know, like the several shots, and which goes to a letter later on we talk about. But so like the shots, do you have your shot record?
I do, and I guarantee you there's more shots that I took than are on that record.
I mean, are all your shots all on your record?
Are they what?
Are all the shots you received on your shot record?
I don't believe so, because I believe I got stabbed a whole lot more many times than I see written down on that thing.
And then that's where the big problem comes into. You know, now you have to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Well, right. I still want to know why I had three rounds of bubonic plague shots.
I guess they were afraid you're going to get into some kind of rat down there or something. You're going to get hungry, start eating it in y'all's foxholes. All right, I'm going to keep going with this, so we're going to go again. Here's some more.
Let's return now to the testimony that General Schwarzkopf gave on January 29th, 1997, to the Senate panel convened to investigate the Gulf War illness. He was asked about detection of chemical and biological weapons on our troops, and this is what he had to say.
We never had a single symptom shown by any of our troop of known symptoms of any chemical contamination, and I never received a single report of the Iraqi use of chemicals.
Now, again, we reference the Nuclear Biological Chemical Desk Log of the 3rd of March, 1991, and the time was 15:15 hours. And again, we referenced this earlier. It says, Lieutenant Colonel Wade advised that Colonel Dunn has confirmed that the soldier of the 3rd Armored Division does have blisters characteristic of H mustard chemical agent on his upper and lower left arm. Also, on the same date, at 18:10 hours, it says, and I quote, Arsent, Sergeant Major Grosner advised that chemical casualty happened on the afternoon of the 28th of February. Now, these nuclear biological chemical logs, again, were the logs that General Schwarzkopf had to review every day. You decide whether he's telling the truth.
Nope, he's not. Because there were other people showing symptoms 3 months later. I was one of them. And a lot of people were that went over there. There was testimony. Even before all of this, there was a lot of testimony.
I had a serious reaction around that time frame that I had to be taken to the rear. Gastrointestinal stuff. I was really, they, you know, of course they just kind of gastritis and sent me on my way, told me I drink bad water, buffalo water or whatever. Those records were never to be found ever again. And when I got back, I immediately started having weird skin rashes and like lesions on my skin and unexplainable, just unexplainable for months on end. And still to this day, I will just turn into this weird rash that I can't tell you why, where it came from. Dermatologist doesn't know why.
Right. I got them. They look like bruises going down my spine.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, that's from the heat. Bullshit.
I mean, that's what they say. Like, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. Or then they tell me it's an allergy. And, well, that would be fine, but I'm very particular about what I eat. I'm very particular. If any of you go on my Facebook, you know I'm very particular about my food. I know where it's sourced. I know what I'm eating. I know where it comes from. I avoid pesticides at all costs. So, you know, I've had an allergy test out the wazoo. They told me the only thing they could find that I was allergic to was mold and pollen. Well, we're all allergic to pollen, yeah. And we're all pretty allergic to mold. So,
right. Yeah. We're going to go on and keep going with this. It's getting closer towards the end. And this is this right here is probably going to, this is just going to make me more mad. Listen to this part. Here we go.
Again, we reference General Schwarzkopf's opening testimony in which he made the following statement.
I never received, before, during, or after hostilities, any report of Iraqi use of chemical weapons.
Now, that statement is disputed in two different sites, the first of which is the Arison Report, dated July 14, 1995. It was a report done by H. Lindsey Arison III, who is the aide to the Undersecretary of the United States Air Force at the Pentagon. In Mr. Arison's report on page 4, and I quote, Section 5, U.S. chemical detection alarms were ineffective. The principal chemical agent detection alarm used during the war, the M8A1, was not sufficiently sensitive to detect sustained low levels of chemical agent and to monitor personnel for contamination. Further, the United States Army material safety data sheets indicate that chronic exposures to levels of over 1/10,000th of a milligram per cubic meter to nerve agent sarin, which is GB, is hazardous and requires the use of protective equipment. The minimum level of chemical agent required to activate the automatic chemical agent detection alarm, the M8A1, commonly in use during the war, exceeds this threshold by a factor of 1,000. Now, to put this into perspective, that means that if it takes one drop to contaminate a swimming pool, then that would mean that it would take 1,000 drops to contaminate that swimming pool to a level that the alarm would go off. In other words, the chemical detection alarms, as Dr. Lindsey Arison had stated, were ineffective. In Section 6, on the same page, page 4 of the Arison Report, it also states, the United States did not have any biological agent detection capability whatsoever during the Gulf War. So if biologicals were used, there would be no way of our troops knowing. During the war, there is a reported 14,000 chemical alarms that did go off. And according to the Department of Defense and the Pentagon, 14,000 of them were defective. And now I cite the Riegel Report of May 25th, 1994.
Okay, I did not know that. 14,000.
My chemical alarms went off. Every last
ours did too.
Around the perimeter.
Ours did too.
And they came back and told us it was a battery malfunction. The batteries were dying.
Really?
Oh, they told us that ours was just a malfunction. Everything was fine.
They told us our batteries were going bad. So I'm like, at the same time, every single one of them, like that.
But think about it. The only way that that could happen is by blowing up all of the bunkers and the wind blowing in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And they made a boo-boo.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they showed in the movie The Gulf War.
Yeah.
Exactly. I can see Wade wants to weigh in on this. Go ahead, Wade.
No, I agree. 14,000, that's not an anomaly. I mean, it's there's obviously something there. The Fox vehicles, you know, the Fox vehicles, I think that was the Marines, maybe even Army. Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, Marines, I believe.
You know, you go back to Desert Storm was the world's largest test ground at the time for all of our latest and greatest toys. You know, everything else worked. You know, all the laser guided bombs and all the damn missiles, and, you know, even the night vision goggles is the first time to really field test those for real world. Everything else worked fine. I can't believe that something is like, you know, the structures.
Well, here's my thing with that. I spent my life out of the Army in federal procurement. But I do, you know, I help us buy things. I've grown up helping us buy things. What I do know is something like that, that's life-saving, anything like body armor, you know, anything like that. There's first article testing, and we test the full of it. We send it through our S&T, and we test it, because it's you know, kind of life or death kind of thing. We would have never fielded it if it hadn't passed some very excruciating testing, and they would have put everything against it, and especially everything against that they thought it was going to be exposed to out there, right? So if it failed in the field at that level, I want to see where that contractor was terminated and his CPARS was dinged for 14,000 pieces of equipment failing simultaneously. Right. You know,
but not on top of that,
where he had to give consideration back to the government and it bankrupted him, right? I want to see that.
But not only that, they said that we didn't have any out there, period. And right there, all of us know we did. You're not going to sit there and say all these chemical alarms went off, but we didn't have any of that life-saving equipment, because they are so full of snap. That's all I can say. I'm going to go to the next part because I'm getting mad.
On page 6, it says, and I quote, Dr. Edward S. Hyman, a New Orleans bacteriologist, has treated a small number of sick veterans and several of their wives for bacteriological infections and has developed a protocol for treatment that has resulted in symptom abatement in many of his patients. Second, during the November 10, 1993 unclassified briefing for members of the United States Senate, in response to direct questioning, then Undersecretary of Defense John Deutsch said that the Department of Defense was withholding classified information on the exposure of U.S. forces to biological materials. Now, this report is very interesting because this indicates that the senators that were sitting on the panel when General Schwarzkopf was testifying, of those senators, most of them were in the Senate when Senator Donald Riegel presented this information in 1994. And as I just mentioned, in 1993, they were made aware of the possibility of our troops being exposed to bacteriological and biological weapons, according to John Deutsch. So how is it possible that these senators can sit there and look surprised when the testimony comes forward that our troops were exposed to something that made them sick?
Okay, the only thing I'm going to say about that is senators knew it in 94. This was 97.
You're assuming they're reading things, though, right? I think a lot of them are just up there catching a
check. No, this is when they had, in 94, they had hearings about this. And so these same senators are sitting in here listening to the same thing, you know, in 97. And they're over there like, oh, I'm surprised. Oh, we didn't know about this. All right, I'm going to keep going with this. We're almost done to the end of this, but y'all just bear, because this right here also, what's about to come up, I think is really important, this last part.
This brings up the issue of biological warfare. Now let's return to General Schwarzkopf's testimony and listen to what he had to say about some of the precautions that were taken to prevent our troops from being exposed to biological weapons.
The botulism, as I understand it, when we first went over there, there was no antitoxin. And the antitoxin that was eventually developed and given to us. What was one that was experimental was not approved by the FDA. It was for that reason that I insisted that any troop that was going to be given this botulism, first of all, be explained what it is and then sign a statement as to the fact that he understood this and agreed to take it. And if he didn't sign the statement, he didn't have to take the botulism antitoxin. I left it up to him because I knew it was not an FDA-approved antitoxin.
Now, this part of Schwarzkopf's testimony clearly indicates that the botulism shots that were given to our troops were voluntary. I hold in my hand a copy of the Orange County Register of February 4th, 1991, in which they reprinted an article from the New York Times written by Gina Colada. It says, and I quote, "On December 21st, the Department of Defense obtained a special waiver needed to require troops to take experimental drugs and vaccines in case of combat or threat of combat." This indicates that these botulism shots and these vaccines were not voluntary, they were mandatory. The article goes on to say, and again I quote, "Although troops must accept standard medical treatments, until now they have not had to accept experimental ones without signing an informed consent statement. As far as I know, there has never been another situation in this nation where people waived their right to give informed consent to receiving experimental treatments," said Dr. Arthur Kaplan, director of the Center for Biomedical Ethics at the University of Minnesota.
That's,
you know how you said there's, I got stabbed a lot more times than are on my record?
Yes.
Like, okay, so first of all, think about where you were. You're a little 20-something, don't know, don't, not smart enough to question authority, nothing. You're just, you're walking through the line, doing what you're supposed to do. And I remember asking questions like, what is this? And I remember the guy that gave me the shot being like, oh, it's just stuff you have to go downrange. That was the answer I got. I wasn't told what the hell was being put in my arm. Nothing. And so I feel like not only were we given these shots mandatorily, because I was never told I had a choice between anything that I was getting inoculated with. And, but we weren't even told what we were getting. It was just get your shot and get out.
Exactly. Exactly. True. Exactly. Yep. And on top of all that, you really think that we signed on the dotted line to begin with? We volunteered ourselves. I guess that's what they're talking about. When we first went into the military, they signed on the dotted line to come in, so they voluntarily decided to take the experimental drugs.
I was told I could get an Article 15 for getting a sunburn because Uncle Sam owned my body. Damaged government property.
I had heard that. Yeah. Yeah. And I, it's kind of, you know, it's interesting you point that out, Tina, that, you know, thinking back on it, I remember, you know, walking down the line, a guy or a gal on each side, there was two or three of them. Each one of them had a gun. Boom, boom, boom. You didn't ask. They didn't provide any information. You were just sore as fuck when you left there.
You were told
there.
To get information, get in line, and go.
You're like, what the? You look at it now, I'm like, today's world, knowing what we know, we'd be asking all kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. You know?
And that's just it. So just to let y'all know, this tape will be put out there in the entirety for all y'all to be able to listen to, so you can go right through it, so you can really get the gist of it. But one of the reasons we want to bring this to light is because I would like to do more of these. I'm going to investigate, I'm going to look, and I'm going to see how much contradictions that I can find all throughout, and you start piecing the ones together who lied, who didn't lie, who was lying, who wasn't lying, who was on her side, who wasn't on her side.
And who was skirting the truth.
That's right. But for me, if you spent more than 30 years, and I mean, look, I'm grateful that Biden brought up the PACT Act that his son, he thinks his son died by, you know, Iraq. But where were they when we were dying? Our guys were dying. Where were they?
Where are they now?
That's right.
It isn't doing a damn thing
it
for us.
Doesn't?
It's absolutely not. It's absolutely not. And the damage is done. Great. You're going to throw it through a few. I mean, let's be honest. There are little perks. There are a little few scraps of money. But at the end of the day, my life how I live, how my family has to live because of my junk is affected forever.
Right.
And you can't put a price tag on that.
And y'all, I'm not just blaming Biden. I'm not. I blame from Bush all the way up till now. Everybody, even Trump had his opportunity to look at this. Everybody had opportunity to listen to what we were saying. Mm-hmm. But they're still not listening, just to let you know. So I guess I'm going to be bitching about this, you know, 20 more years down the road if I'm still alive, that these four presidents that, you know. But that's what I'm saying is they dropped the ball. So my life is less than their life. My life is considered less than what their life is. Well, they can kiss my sorry ass because my life is worth everything. And so
I feel like we have to keep fighting. Like, I get exhausted. I mean, it took me till now, till this stage in my life to like pick up my sword and say, you know what? I'm not laying down for this. I am owed what I'm due here. I'm not going to be made feel like I'm doing something wrong for standing up for myself, but I did that for years. And then you'd go up against the machine. And it's exhausting. We're already tired and they know it, right? They know it. They know we're just completely fatigued and exhausted. So you chunk a bunch of paperwork at me and a bunch of a criteria and bureaucracy. I'm going to go back to trying to just live my best life and I'm just not going to bother with that. How many people have gone to their grave or in some kind of medical facility that can't even speak for themselves now because of what they've gone through? Right. So I think all of us that have any life left of us, any health left in us, need to be the champions for those.
Right. And I'm not, guys that are in the chat, if y'all think that I'm saying the pact, that's a great thing. I'm just grateful that he brought out to light at least something about one of the Gulf Wars. Because he didn't talk about Desert Storm. Right. He talked about Iraqi freedom.
Right.
And so...
second round of presumptives, right? Remember a few years ago, 10, 15 years ago, there was a presumptive of irritable bowel disorders, right? And
chronic fatigue
and
fibromyalgia,
any kind of autoimmune thing. If you think about that, that's all neurological, every last bit of it. So anything that touches neurological disorders should be presumptive.
Thank you. That's what I keep saying. Why don't you just put down neurological disorders also? That's mm-hmm. the part that makes me mad. It's because, I mean...
Oh, and then the cavity audit is like, oh, well, you've already got fibromyalgia, and here's all the list of fibromyalgia. So if you try to claim this other diagnosis over here and any of the symptoms cross the lane, nah, you're already getting taken care of for that.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's a good point. That's bullshit, but that's true. You know, call a spade, that's how they navigate it with us. Oh, well, we're already taking care of this and it falls under this. So, unfortunate.
Lost on me, the order of operations that they rolled out their presumptives, right? I mean, oh, who doesn't have stomach issues? Who doesn't have the symptoms of fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue, right? Those, if you look at how they rate those are some of the lowest ratings. If you try to maximize your rating, you can only get like 30%.
Right.
You know, so, but then if you come over here to this thing now and you say, oh, I have this, that, or the other, and it would be 70%. Well, you can't claim that because you're already getting this over here. So it's strategy. It's truly strategy. And it's all based on money. It's all based on keeping the money in the coffers.
Oh, exactly. It is. Exactly.
You really got to talk. Those of you out there, if your ratings are low, we're the people that can. You have to advocate for yourself first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And there is a method to the madness. Not any one thing is going to get you where you cross the finish line. It takes don't do it yourself.
100% to get 100%.
Yeah, right. Yeah. 2 and 2 ain't 4. If you're in the military. 2 and 2 is not freaking 4.
and so to let all y'all know, just to let y'all know, so I started back up on the patches again, and it's done wonders. I'm telling y'all.
Can you move?
Look, I'm not going to push anything on anybody, But if y'all go to the Facebook page, just scroll down, you'll see the activation of your cells on there. If you got to scroll down a little bit on the Facebook page.
Ugh.
But I'm telling y'all, for me, and I had another guy send me a message last week. He just started them. He said this is the only thing he found so far that helped him. And I mean, it's amazing. My feet's not burning as bad. My energy level's coming back up. And so I like them. And so, I mean.
So isn't that a little bit ebb and flow, though? I mean, because of our situation?
Well,
I'll tell you what.
Yes and no.
I kind of feel like you find something and it makes you feel a little better and you're doing okay. And it's like whatever's going on in us.
Yeah.
Kind of figures out the code and then you crash again, and then you got to find something else. And, you know,
and like, right. And so
find something would just fit.
Well, I got off of them and then the VA messed up my medicine. And so my wife was like, hey, why don't you get back on them? So I did. I got back on them. And
well, if it works, it works.
It did. You know, I mean, it didn't kick in. That's right. It did not kick in like the 10 minutes the first time. It took a few days. And then all of a sudden I was like, okay, I feel better. Mm-hmm. I you know, I'm not a sore or any of this stuff unless I go do something stupid that I'm not supposed to do, which that's every day and everything.
Well, that's moving, right?
Right. And so, before we go to the after the show, I just want to talk about, you know, thanks for everybody for getting on the Patreon and start signing on to there. You can catch all the latest episodes and y'all go check out the page. It's really good. And we got all everything up there. And if you know, for a dollar more, because we want to take this on the road. And so we're working on the nonprofit. We want to take this on the road. And so that way we start letting the country know. So nobody else out there goes through what we're going through ever again. And veterans, stop freaking fighting amongst yourselves, man. I mean, after this show, I got a phone call. I'm not going to say the person's name. And they were reaming me about, you don't know, y'all weren't there before. We didn't know about it.
In my opinion, I give all of us grace. We're all fighting our own whatever, right? And I think that there are those that were probably, they woke up long before the rest of us did. Like I said, I was naive. You couldn't have sold this to me.
Right,
you couldn't have sold this to me years ago. And so the last thing I'm thinking about is that this is a possibility that this happened. And so don't damn me or fault me because I woke up later than you did.
Well, and but not only that, this is the way I feel about it. Veterans are fighting amongst veterans when we should be connecting with each other and helping each other. If you want to argue with me, just don't bother calling me anymore. If you want to say if you don't like what I have to say, you don't have to watch my show. That's what I'm
like
here.
I don't like what somebody posts.
Right. This is a documentary about us, about what we went through, what we've done. And that way our kids will know to tell their kids, look, hey, watch out for this. Watch out for that. Or, hey, this is what their war was about. But we're about to go into the after show. Thank you all for listening. And